Hi, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona for Thursday, March 20th, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and today our front page stories include Storms Cause Both Relief and Havoc, Figuring Out the Da Vinci Code, Removal of Code Talker Web Pages Irks Leaders, and Bringing Their Brew to NAU. So we will start with the one closest to the top of the page, which is called Heavy Snowfall Brings Needed Precipitation to Northern Arizona, Leads to Closures, Fatal Accidents. And this is written by Cody Bashur, digital editor. More than tripling the season's snowfall total in the span of 10 days, with 33.9 inches of snow coming in Flagstaff between March 6th and March 15th. Some desperately needed precipitation also brought numerous challenges to the northern Arizona region, including multiple fatal accidents. Sitting at 12.9 inches of snowfall for the season as of March 5th, the first round of storms on March 6th and 7th quickly doubled the snowfall totals while breaking a pair of daily records. After 3 inches of snow arrived on March 6th, March 7th's 15.9 inches of snow instantly doubled the season total, while setting a daily record for snow, as well as precipitation, with 0.96 inches. Landing 9th all-time for a single-day snowfall in March, the 15.9 inches of snow also ranks 26th most for a day in Flagstaff, dating back to 1893. Just 19 other days recorded more inches of snow since 1960, but 8 of them have been since the year 2000. Closures to Interstate 40 on Friday night extended into Saturday morning and afternoon, with Coconino County Public Works also working in partnership with the Coconino County Sheriff's Office and Yavapai County to close Stoneman Lake Road March 7th through 10th. Flagstaff Unified School District and others closed Thursday and Friday, the final 2 days before spring break, with Coconino Community College closing on Friday, March 9th as well. Though the snowfall subsided for a few days, another 15 inches of snow across 5 days led to additional lengthy freeway closures due to fatal accidents along I-40. Another 1.5 inches of snow was recorded on Tuesday, March 11th, followed by 7.4 inches of snow on Thursday, March 13th, for another daily record as a snow squall warning was issued by the National Weather Service, NWS, late in the afternoon, as another 2.9 inches of snow fell on Friday and 3.2 on Saturday. Multiple other closures occurred as weather-related accidents began to stack up. I-40 closed Thursday afternoon, soon after the snow squall warning was issued by the NWS, while Lake Mary Road was restricted to local traffic on Friday. Stoneman Lake Road, between I-17 and Lake Mary Road, closed ahead of the incoming storms on Wednesday night, and Perkinsville Road closed early Thursday morning. The closures did not, however, completely prevent collisions on the freeway, as an accident at 3:27 p.m. on Thursday near Williams led to 2 deaths and 16 injuries, requiring transportation for medical care among the 22 total vehicles involved. Oh my. My goodness. According to a release by the Arizona Department of Safety, DPS, on Saturday, a jackknifed tractor trailer completely obstructed I-40 westbound, with numerous vehicles failing to brake properly as they collided with the vehicles blocking the freeway. Multiple passenger cars were rear-ended, pushing them into, and in some cases underneath, crushed tractor trailers. Oh, how awful. The resulting crash led to a fire that burned for more than 20 hours. The resulting Juan Beltran Sanchez of Chino Valley and Evelyn Davis of Ganado were announced as the victims of the fatal crash. Additionally, I-40 westbound closed east of Holbrook at milepost 294 due to a multi-vehicle fatal accident around 1:34 p.m. on Friday, March 14th. According to DPS, the preliminary investigation noted that a commercial tractor trailer rear-ended a passenger vehicle, causing a chain reaction that added another tractor trailer and a second passenger vehicle. One person was unharmed, but two others sustained injuries, and five victims died in the accident. Oh my gosh, that's awful. According to DPS, the victims were 34-year-old Heat Vikram, 17-year-old Andrew Michalou, 50-year-old Sarah Broyle Case, 17-year-old Sophia Case, and 51-year-old Samuel Case, who died in the hospital on March 18th. Oh, dear. I-40 eastbound remained closed from Thursday afternoon to 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, while the I-40 westbound reopened near Holbrook around noon on Saturday and near Williams around 1 p.m. on Saturday. Additionally, the I-17 northbound and State Route 89A also reopened on Saturday morning. Lake Mary Road also opened over the weekend, with Stoneman Lake Road and Perkinsville Road reopening on Monday. Thursday's storms forced the city of Flagstaff to close its facilities early Thursday night, with Northern Arizona University closing its campus during spring break on Friday. Coconino County also closed the Willard Springs Green Waste site on Friday and Saturday in anticipation of the snowfall. Three people also died after being struck by trains in Flagstaff on Friday, with two deaths occurring around 8 a.m. east of the junction of Highway 89 and Route 66. Neither victim has been identified, with both pronounced dead at the scene, with injuries described as catastrophic. The two individuals were reportedly waiting on the eastbound tracks, waiting for a westbound train to pass, with evidence at the scene suggesting intoxication may have been a contributing factor. The second collision leading to the third death occurred just before 10 p.m. on Friday, west of the Beaver Street and Route 66 intersection. The victim, identified as 54-year-old Jason Dulk of Flagstaff, was also struck by an eastbound train. According to the department's release about the night incident, the train crew reported seeing Dulk laying down on the train tracks, facing away from the approaching train. Oh my goodness. In total, the nearly 3 feet of snow through the first half of March has Flagstaff 32.3 inches below normal for the season, after entering the month 57.2 inches below the normal total. Sitting at 35.6 inches of snow for the month, 2025 ranks 16th all-time for the most snowfall in March, with 11 days remaining, and is nearing 2023's 43.7 inches, which ranks as the eighth most for the month in history. The 35.6 inches of snow through the first 15 days of March also ranks 7th all-time for the first half of the month, and was the most snow between March 1st and March 15th since 37.2 inches fell during the stretch of days in 2000. There is no snow in the National Weather Service forecast for next week, however, with temperatures rising into the upper 60s by Monday and Tuesday. And that article was called "Heavy Snowfall Brings Needed Precipitation to Northern Arizona, Leads to Closures, Fatal Accidents." And this was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. Our next front page story's title is "Coconuts Host First Regional Robotics Competition." And this is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. A picture there of the team. Coconino High School, CHS, hosted a regional first robotics competition Friday with teams from across the United States bringing competitors they'd designed and built themselves to Flagstaff for the tournament. First, or for inspiration and recognition of science and technology, is a global robotics nonprofit. The Arizona North Regional, held in the CHS gymnasium, lasted most of the day on March 14th and 15th. The competition's theme and the tasks the robots need to be able to complete change each year. This year's game is called Reefscape, and involves manipulating sections of PVC pipe, representing coral, and large inflatable balls, representing algae, around a metal structure designed to resemble a reef. The goal is to place the coral onto poles sticking out from four different levels of the reef, and remove the algae from the ecosystem by throwing it into a net suspended over the center of the court. The structure is set up on both sides of the court, with teams of three robots working together to complete the objectives on each side. CHS senior Elena Klopfenstein explained that first events are designed to encourage cooperation, as each round includes these alliances of three teams, so any team could be working with or competing against each other in different matches. It builds this environment, she said. We all want to help each other. We all want each other to succeed because we could all be working together. CHS's robotic squad team 2486, the Coconuts, currently has 21 members. According to a flyer made by junior Rihanna Patel for this event, the team includes 15 finalists for the first Dean's List, with one winner and seven seniors, who have been offered a total of over $1 million in scholarships. A total of 43% of the Coconuts are female, 40% are minority students, and 33% will be first-generation college students. The Coconuts joined the first Robotics Hall of Fame last spring after winning the Impact Award at the 2024 World Championship. The Coconuts had designed and built its robot, called Leonardo da Vinci, in 6 weeks with this task in mind. Members began building a wooden prototype for the programmers to understand the robot's mechanisms, and then machined the parts for the final robot, constructed and programmed it. The robot has a piece that funnels the coral pipes into its elevator, and then to a dual sorting mechanism that can pull the algae balls off the reef, throw them into the net, and place the coral pipes on all four levels. It also has an algae mechanism on its front that can score the balls either low or high. We've been continuously making some small improvements as we notice things and just testing what's working, said Patel, who is on the impact team and also helps with the build portion, repairing the robot between matches. Patel was the drive coach for this tournament as well, helping the drivers with navigating the field. Early Friday afternoon, a group of the coconuts was busy repairing the robot to prepare for an upcoming match because Da Pinci had collided with another team's robot during the previous match, crumpling one of its intakes. They had to hammer it out, replace some shafts to make it work properly again, explained senior Connor Norris, whose role on the team includes leading the programming efforts. He also helps with the build portion and is one of the robot drivers. The team had been doing very well so far, Norris said, adding that they were one of the top scorers in this competition. Patel agreed, saying that the previous day's match or practice match had also gone well. Klopfenstein is also on the Coconuts impact team, which she explained helped with the setup for this weekend's competition, the first held at CHS. They placed water bottles and hand sanitizer beneath each team's desk and helped run the concession stand throughout the event. Supporting science education. The Coconuts are involved in community outreach as well as robotics, hosting annual STEM fairs at Loop and Killip Elementary Schools, supporting teams across the Navajo Nation with its ResBotics program, and taking part in state and national advocacy for STEM education. This work is led by students on the impact team, though every team member assists in some way. According to the event flyer, the team has had 20 outreach events in the past year, including 940 combined hours of work from coconuts and reaching more than 25,000 people. I think one of our biggest things probably is our love for STEM and our ability as high school students to get out into the community and bring kids of all ages into it, Patel said. We do a lot of work on the reservation, and that's pretty cool. It's very hard to get access to STEM, and FIRST is a great opportunity for it. So it's cool that we're able to do that as high school students. In May, team members will be part of the 2025 Arizona Advocacy Conference to meet with state legislators to advocate for education policies. As a result of the 2024 conference, Coconuts had been given $30,000 in funding over the next 3 years from the Arizona Department of Education. Members of the Coconuts have traveled to Washington, D.C. for the National Advocacy Conference each year since 2022, contributing to the passage of both the CHIPS Act and Every Student Succeeds Act. Klopfenstein said the Coconuts was the only team from Arizona in attendance at the national conference, and that the team is working to get others from the state to join. The Coconuts also helped start a new robotics initiative on the Navajo Nation last year called ResBotics. They worked with teachers at schools across the reservation to start 16 new teams, which competed in the regional qualifier at Diné College, also started last year as a part of this effort. The Navajo Nation is now its own region for FTC robotics, meaning that it will send two teams to the World Championships each year. Two Resbotics teams made it to Worlds last year, and two went to premier events. Klopfenstein helped start Resbotics last year and said it was her favorite initiative to be a part of. For most of these teams, they're hours apart. The nearest Home Depot or hardware store is almost 3 hours away. This is why Resbotics is so important, because there's not that much STEM opportunity out there, she said. And there's some more pictures. I wish there was a little video of their robot working, because that would have been amazing to see. That article was called Coconuts Host First Regional Robotics Competition by Abigail Kessler, Sun Staff Reporter. All right, moving on to the third front page story. This one is called Navajo Code Talkers Pages to be Restored by Department of Defense. Coconino Supervisors Address Removal, written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. A day after Axios first reported that articles highlighting the Navajo Code Talkers had been removed from the Department of Defense websites following President Donald Trump's executive order to end diversity, equity, and inclusion DEI initiatives, a Department of Defense spokesperson said they will be restored. The department is restoring content about the Navajo Code Talkers, the email statement said on Tuesday afternoon. It had previously been removed during the auto removal process. One such page, titled Code Talkers Helped U.S. Win World Wars I and II, was still offline as of 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, with DEI included within the page's URL. The removal of the pages from the Department of Defense's website was addressed by Coconino County District 5 Supervisor Lena Fowler and County Board of Supervisors Chair and District 4 Supervisor Judy Begay early during Tuesday's regularly scheduled board meeting. I was very surprised and very disappointed to learn that the Department of Defense and the U.S. Army had scrubbed articles on the Navajo Code Talkers and their contribution to America's victory during World War II. Removing information from websites as part of President Donald Trump's campaign against diversity, equity, and inclusion, Fowler, a member of the Navajo Nation, said to begin her statement. Looking back on the history of the Navajo Code Talkers, Fowler detailed the code's use, which was never broken, in the Pacific during World War II, the code remaining classified until 1968, and the eventual awarding of gold and silver medals to all of those who participated in the secret program by President George W. Bush in July 2001. Regardless of circumstances, regardless of history, they came forward to serve America, Fowler read from Bush's speech during the 2001 ceremony. The Navajo Code itself provides a part of the reason. Late in his life, Albert Smith explained the code word for America was our mother. Our mother stood for freedom, our religion, our ways of life, and that's why we went in. To conclude her statement, Fowler stood, joined by all those in attendance at the meeting, and said she stands with and honors the Navajo Code Talkers, as their history and their efforts could not be erased. Begay thanked Fowler for bringing attention to the subject and noted that many will have to endure cuts moving forward, whether it be to programs or funding, but that the indigenous population of the United States has already suffered much throughout history. As Native Americans, especially Navajos, we have endured a lot, Begay said. We've endured the long walk, where a lot of people died. They were killed. They couldn't make it and died along the way. Begay added, I just want to say that we did, we will, and we can persevere. Multiple media outlets cited Pentagon Press Secretary John Yotes' statement in response to the pages being removed, noting his appreciation for the removal and compliance with the DEI order. As Secretary Pete Hegseth has said, DEI is dead at the Defense Department, the statement by Earl Yacht read. We are pleased by the rapid compliance across the department with the directive removing DEI content from all platforms. Following the deaths of 98-year-old Samuel Sandoval in August 2022 and 107-year-old John Kinsel Sr. in October 2024, the last two living code talkers are Thomas H. Begay and Peter McDonald. The explanation didn't sit well with Peter McDonald, 96, one of just two surviving code talkers and a former Navajo Nation chairman. He objected any implication that celebrating heroes who helped to win World War II equates with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some of these people who are taking the pictures or stories off their shelves are either racist or they have absolutely no understanding of what DEI stands for, McDonald told Cronkite News by phone. You're not only erasing Navajo culture, but you're also eliminating Navajo code. This is shameful, Senator Ruben Gallego, Democrat Arizona, a Marine combat veteran, posted on X. Trump can't erase history just because he feels like it. McDonald, who lives in Tuba City, enlisted in the Marines at age 15 and also deployed in the South Pacific. He served as chairman of the Navajo Nation from 1971 to 1983, and also from 1987 to 1991, according to his biography. This has nothing to do with DEI. Code is a weapon, and that weapon helped us win the war, he said. Crystalline Curley, Speaker of the Navajo Nation Council, called the Code Talker's legacy a cornerstone of American history. Erasing their extraordinary contributions from formal military history is not only disrespectful, it is dishonorable, she said in a statement before the Pentagon said it would restore the material. And there's a note here that Madeline Bates of Cronkite News contributed to this report. And the title was Navajo Code Talkers Pages to be Restored by Department of Defense. Coconino Supervisors Address Removal. And this article was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. And now we're moving on to the fourth story on this page. It is called Bringing Their Brew to NAU. Somebody likes to rhyme, huh? Matador Campus Dining Partner for More Local Coffee on Campus. Again, written by Cody Bashore. Seeking to continue developing a connection with the Flagstaff community, Northern Arizona University, NAU, is collaborating with Matador Coffee Roasting Company for its first locally owned food service brand on its campus. Three locations are now branded with the Matador name via the partnership with NAU Campus Dining, including Matador at Scholar's Corner in Klein Library, Matador at Bean and Beaker in the Science Lab facility, and a third, simply named Matador Coffee, inside of University Union near the information desk. A grand opening event took place Monday, February 10th, with a ceremonial ribbon cutting at all three locations. According to William Brandt, NAU Campus Dining's brand and partnership manager, discussions with Matador Coffee began about a year ago as conversations initially focused on serving beans in the existing cafe spaces. The plan quickly evolved into something much bigger, fully branded Matador cafes on campus, offering the same great coffee and food found at their Flagstaff locations, Brandt said. Matador's commitment to quality and flexibility to fit campus culture made them the perfect match, and our collaboration brought this vision to life. Brandt called Matador Coffee an ideal partner, with the company standing out immediately due to its enthusiasm, commitment to quality, and collaborative spirit. Considering NAU launched its certificate in brewing and fermentation science with local microbrewers, Brandt said a local coffee house felt like a natural next step as the university sought to continue building a bridge with the Flagstaff community. For Matador Coffee, once it connected with NAU Campus Dining, the plan to open the three different campus locations just needed a few months of planning, followed by some construction work during the winter break. Opening up as the spring semester began, Matador Coffee owner Mario Martuscello, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, said he was blown away by how well received the business was by students and faculty. With Matador Coffee's location on Milton Road, just steps away from NAU's campus, Martuscello explained how significant the partner is to his business as well. We do see a lot of students at our Milton shop, but nowhere near the numbers we can touch on campus, Martuscello said. From a marketing standpoint, it's also a huge opportunity. Just being on campus, connecting our brand to the students and faculty will grow us in Flagstaff, but also carry us beyond campus. We have people from all over the country coming to NAU, so we're very happy to be part of their college experience. Though the bar menu of alcoholic drinks at Matador Coffee's Milton location obviously won't be appearing on the local campus locations, most of the business's signature drinks, burritos, and paninis will be available in order to keep all the menus as uniform as possible, according to Martuscello. Additionally, freshly roasted coffee by the pound will also be available by the pound as well as Matador Coffee merchandise. Brandt said the branding was a key piece of the collaboration between NAU Campus Dining and Matador Coffee, with the cafes intended to feel authentic to the business's other locations, while still honoring the history of those cafes on campus. A few of the current items left off Matador's NAU menus could be added in the future, with the exception of the pastries offered, which will still be made by the campus dining bakery team by the recipes and direction provided by their own chef. Matador's NAU locations will also have pricing that matches the menus of its off-campus locations, and student meal plans will include transfer specials similar to those at all of campus dining's other retail dining locations. From opening until 11 a.m., students will have the choice of steam or drip coffee, hot or iced, with a breakfast burrito. After 11 a.m., the special includes a variety of hot and cold beverage options with a variety of baked pastries. Campus dining will still operate the trio of Matador locations on campus, staffing the cafes with student workers and baristas who will prepare the beverages and food to the specifications of Matador. And that front page article was called Bringing Their Brew to NAU, Matador Campus Dining Partner for More Local Coffee on Campus. And that was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. And here's a reminder that you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print materials due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also get our stream and on-demand programs with the new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android devices. So I'm moving on to the local and Arizona news page right now, and we have several obituaries to read. I'll just preface this with the first one I'm reading is somebody I knew well, and I will not, I don't want to get emotional when I read it, but I, you know, pretty sad. And this obituary is for Dr. Merrill Abishaus. Dr. Merrill Abishaus, Flagstaff community member for over 50 years, died on March 14, 2025, at 86 years of age. Born in Pottsville, Pennsylvania in 1938, he is survived by his beloved wife of 66 years, Rhoda Jaffe Abishaus. He is also survived by his children, Robin Abishaus with Stephen Com, Mickey Abishaus with Michelle, Cheska Commissar with Jan, and Ivan Abishaus with Wendy Osborne. Grandchildren, Jaffe Abishaus, Joshua Abishaus with Kate, Shane Abishaus, Anna Calm, Evan Calm with Michaela Berry, Jacob Commissar, and Joseph Commissar. Great-granddaughter Lily Abishaus, brother Alan Abishaus with Sandra, sister-in-law Selma Abishaus, and his faithful Rottweiler Lucy. Merrill moved with his family to Flagstaff in 1972, where he became the first full-time orthopedist in Flagstaff and founded Northern Arizona Orthopedics. He was chief of staff for the Flagstaff Hospital when the current hospital was built and was instrumental in building what is now the North Star Medical Building. Along with two other families, Merrill and Rhoda founded Flagstaff's first synagogue, Hechal Ba'aronim, Temple in the Pines. Merrill served on the Hechal Ba'aronim board for many years and was instrumental in helping develop the Chabad Center in Flagstaff and welcoming Flagstaff's first full-time rabbi. Dr. Abishaus had also been involved in many other local efforts over the years. He served on the Flagstaff Beautification and Public Art Commission and on the Flagstaff Symphony Board. He also served on the NAU Lumberjack Athletic Association Board as well, as serving as its president. An avid supporter of NAU athletics, his "Go Get 'em Jacks" cheer and cowbell still ring on the courts and fields of the NAU teams. He and his wife endowed a basketball scholarship at NAU for a student showing excellence in athletics, academics, and community involvement. They also have provided a scholarship for the Martin Springer Institute's summer program for educators to assist in Holocaust education efforts. This is out of date already. A funeral service will be held at Norville Owens Mortuary, 914 East Route 66. It was at 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 18, 2025. Followed by a graveside service and then a luncheon at Chabad on West University Avenue. The service was available on a Zoom link. Shiva, An opportunity to visit the bereaved will take place at the home of Rhoda Abbashouse, 1801 Hereford Drive, Flagstaff, during the following times. A couple days are done already, so I'll just read the rest. Thursday from 1 to 4 p.m. and 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Sunday, 1 to 4 and 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Each evening, there will be a short service at 7 p.m. In lieu of flowers, remembrances may be made to Chabad of Flagstaff, the Preservation Hall Foundation, or a charity of your choice. And this obituary was for Dr. Merrill Abbashouse. The second obituary we have today is for Linda D. Radicevich. On April 17, 1948, in Gallup, New Mexico, the world and parents Gladys G. Wilson and Robert E. Wilson welcomed Linda D. Wilson. At three, her family moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, where her parents established a Native American curios shop and a clothing shop. Linda attended Flagstaff Public Schools, graduating Flagstaff High in 1966. She spent summers with her Aunt Martha Wilson in Gallup, working at Toby Turpin's Trading Post. Following high school, Linda studied art at Northern Arizona University, earning a baccalaureate in art, producing paintings throughout the 1970s. In Gallup one summer, she met John Stephen Radicevich. The two married August 30, 1975. While Linda was pregnant with their first and only child, her doctor discovered a cancerous melanoma on Linda's right hip. He recommended abortion as the cancer could migrate to the fetus. Linda refused abortion, bearing healthy daughter Christy Lynn, December 1, 1978. Post-childbirth, Linda worked in the NAU music program with Mel Kinney, then as a secretary for many years for optometrist Philip Wong. Active in the Episcopal Church, Linda served on Altar Guild as junior, then senior warden, and took an active role in the Curcio program and as the National Episcopal Curcio Program site planner, taking her to numerous locations. She then accepted a position as lay chaplain of NAU Student Episcopal Canterbury Fellowship, until a break with the church led Linda to join an Anglican community. Linda had a breast removed from cancer in 2014, going into remission. She joined friends working at Elkview Realty and collecting data for Nielsen. Cancer struck again. Oh, this poor person. Cancer struck again in 2019, necessitating removal of a kidney. Scans found the kidney cancer metastasized to her remaining kidney, a lung, and her brain. Despite a complicated, protracted battle, the brain tumor spread, complications leading to Linda's passing on February 7, 2025. She leaves behind daughter Christy Radicevich Jacobs, son-in-law Arno Jacobs, and Dutch family Tom and Yoke Jacobs, Simone Van Puyvelde, nieces Lois and Jules Van Puyvelde, and many friends. Linda decided against a funeral, cremated with ashes spread in three locations. A wake was held in her honor February 23, 2025. In lieu of sending flowers, family encourages donations to the Cancer Research Institute, the American Cancer Society, or other cancer-fighting organizations. And that obituary was for Linda D. Radicevich. And then we have, looks like there's one more obituary. Yes, there is. This obituary is for Dallin Ray Dennison. Whitney Dennison, 86, of Utah, longtime resident of Ash Fork and Flagstaff, Arizona, passed away on March 4, 2025. preceded in death by his parents, longtime partner Kathy, son Dallin Dennison Jr., and five siblings, survived by his partner, Deborah Gragg, sister Susie Grange, daughter Dawn Short, grandchild Casey Tibbetts, and Kathy's children, Robert Maynard, Teresa Nelson, and Tammy. Arrangements by Norval Owens. And that obituary was for Dallin Ray Dennison. Also on this page, which is the local in Arizona page, we have a column called Community Health Matters. And today it's called Taking Care of Your Health on World Health Day. It's written by Northern Arizona Healthcare. Every year on April 7th, we celebrate World Health Day, a global observance of health as a human right, sponsored by the World Health Organization, WHO. Whether you're a healthcare professional or a person seeking health services, we all have a role to play in our own well-being and of those around us. It was WHO that held the historic international conference where it was proclaimed that primary care was crucial to reaching a state of health care for all across the world. The conference solidified the significance of primary care as the main touchpoint that ensures patients have an opportunity to manage health concerns before they become problematic. Primary care providers are the first point of contact for patients seeking health care, acting as a hub for general medical needs that focus on prevention, wellness, and treatment of common illnesses. This World Health Day, Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, wants to remind the community about the importance of preventative care and how it contributes to maintaining our physical and mental well-being. NAH is deeply committed to investing in the community, and that includes investing in our facilities and prioritizing recruiting new primary care providers. NAH recently announced the opening of its new primary care clinic at 1895 North Jasper Drive, Suite 3 in Flagstaff. The expanded clinic offers 36 state-of-the-art exam rooms to accommodate a larger number of primary care providers. We hired an experienced physician recruiter whose specialty is recruiting practitioners to rural areas to ensure that we are attracting providers who align with NAH's core values. Between opening this new facility and bringing on the specialized recruiter, NAH has grown from employing 8 primary care providers last year in Flagstaff to a total of 16 primary care providers who will be seeing patients by the summer of 2025. These new providers join an established primary care team, which includes a number of long-standing physicians, including Amy Britt, MD, Megan Hughes, MD, and Mark Pico, MD, as well as physician assistants and nurse practitioners, who all help families in the community stay healthy. NAH's new primary care providers share a passion for healthcare and are committed to developing exceptional healthcare to the community. Demetra Barr, MD, encourages members of the community to establish a relationship with a primary care provider. A primary care provider delivers patient-centered care, which means the provider is familiar with a patient's history, allowing for not only first contact care, but also continuity of comprehensive care and providing a patient access to a customized healthcare team when needed, Dr. Barr said. Studies have shown that patients with a primary care provider have lower healthcare expenses through less use of the emergency department and more health promotion through preventative care, chronic disease management, and regular screenings. This contributes to overall improved health outcomes, and a healthy community is a thriving community. We know patients' needs are unique, So having a variety of providers can help patients decide who best suits their needs. Once a patient chooses the best provider for them, a relationship is built. Derek Brown, DO, who recently started at NAH's primary care clinic, was excited to establish himself in the community and get to know new patients. I always enjoy introducing myself when I first walk in, looking them square in the eye and shake their hand, while letting them know they are welcome here. And then I find out what I can help them with, Dr. Brown said. As we travel through life, having someone who knows you, what you've been through, are going through, and even possibly what's coming next can be invaluable. NAH will continue to prioritize recruiting new providers in Northern Arizona as part of its commitment to delivering exceptional care to the community it serves. This will ensure that residents in our area can remain in their communities and receive the best care close to home. In the meantime, you can celebrate World Health Day by doing the following. Take a moment to schedule a primary care for you or a loved one. Talk with your primary care provider about any concerns you have. Visit with family members about one another's health history and provide that information to your primary care giver. To learn more about NAH's personalized primary care on Flagstaff and to book an appointment, please visit nahealth.com/, the rest of these words each have a hyphen between them, Northern Arizona Healthcare Medical Group Flagstaff. And that column, the Community Health Matters, was called Taking Care of Your Health on World Health Day, and it was written by Northern Arizona Healthcare. Also on the Local in Arizona page, we have an article called Lowell Observatory Recognized in Lists from Time and Newsweek by Daily Sun staff. Lowell Observatory was recently recognized in two different lists from national publications for 2025. Lowell was named the best science museum in the United States on Thursday, March 6th, as part of the 2025 Reader's Choice Awards contest from Newsweek. The award was chosen by a public vote in February among 15 organizations nominated by a panel of experts. Senator Mark Kelly and Alex Skelpsa Ridgway, the interim director of the Arizona Office of Tourism, congratulated Lowell on the achievement in the observatory's press release. Lowell has been at the forefront of astronomical discovery, inspiring generations of scientists and space enthusiasts, Kelly said. This well-deserved recognition highlights the observatory's continued impact on education, research, and our understanding of the universe. Other science museums recognized in the Newsweek Reader's Choice voting included the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry in Portland, the Science Museum of Virginia in Richmond, the Griffin Museum of Science and Industry, and the Field Museum, which are both in Chicago. Lowell Observatory's storied history and ongoing contributions to astronomical education and research, Flagstaff's STEM city designation, and the local community spirit are truly unparalleled, said Tracy Ward, director of the Flagstaff Convention and Visitors Bureau. This recognition is well deserved. Last week, Lowell was also included in Time magazine's annual list of the world's greatest places. This list comes from nominations submitted to Time from an international network of correspondents and contributors, with an eye towards those offering new and exciting experiences, according to its introduction. Lowell is among the places to visit section of the list, which mentions its role in the discovery of Pluto, the Marley Foundation Astronomy Discovery Center, which first opened last year, and its proximity to other Dark Sky International designated locations. Kelly also congratulated Lowell on this achievement, as did Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs and Flagstaff Mayor Becky Daggett. For over 130 years, Lowell has led the way in astronomical research and education, Hobbs said. It stands as a crown jewel of Arizona, yet its impact reaches far beyond shaping science, education, the economy, and culture worldwide. The observatory noted that this announcement came on the anniversary of both founder Percival Lowell's birth on March 13, 1855, and Lowell Observatory's announcement of the discovery of Pluto on March 13, 1930. We are honored to be named as one of the world's greatest places, said Lowell Observatory Executive Director Amanda Bosch. We think of Lowell Observatory as a portal between our world and other places in our solar system, galaxy, and universe. Our research brings space closer to us through our understanding of it, and we invite the public to join us in exploring the wonders of our universe as well. And you can find more about this at lowell.edu. And that article was called Lowell Observatory, Recognized in Lists from Time and Newsweek Magazines by Daily Sun staff. And that's all the time we have for Arizona Daily Sun today. For Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. I hope you have a great day, and thanks for listening.